Our first speaker this morning is Bruce Huber. In his presentation, Courageous Leadership, The People Side of Safety, he will talk about empowering people to become part of a solution rather than part of the problem. Bruce is currently Vice President of Safety for InThink, a company focused on developing solutions to positively impact driver behavior. Prior to accepting this position 16 months ago, Bruce was Barrick's Senior Director, Safety and Occupational Health. Bruce had responsibility for 26 operations and 33,000 miners worldwide. He was part of a development team and instrumental in implementing Barrick's enviable Courageous Safety Leadership Program, which has changed the culture within Barrick and has been modeled by numerous other companies. He helped Barrick achieve ever-increasing improvement in safety and health performance and remains passionate about achieving a safety vision of every person going home safe and healthy every day across all industries. How about a warm welcome for Bruce?
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with a group of people who are obviously very interested in improving how we do our business. Having spent most of the last 30 years involved either directly or indirectly in the safety field and working on behavior, identifying behaviors, my wife quite often reminds me when I'm driving that road rage is not an appropriate behavior. So I brought a video clip I thought I'd share with you to get started this morning. At a conference earlier this year, I heard a colleague talking about what they'd been doing around technology in their company, and what he said was, we spent millions of dollars over the past 5 years implementing a communication system and then introducing telematics for our vehicles. We could have done a better job with our people. That struck home with me because at Barrick we did and had focused on the people side of safety for quite a long time. So I'll talk to you briefly this morning about two examples, Courageous Leadership, obviously a people approach, and then balancing that with technology. In 2002, when Barrick acquired Homestake and I joined Barrick, we took a look around the company and there was no global direction, no consistent direction around safety and health across the sites they had at the time. But when we looked at their performance, even though many of them were using the same tools, had the same policies, procedures, etc., their performance from site to site was quite different. And it sounds very simple now, but it took us a while to figure out that the difference between those sites was obviously the people. So even though their performance was improving each year, as we extrapolated that data out, it was going to be about 41 years before we approached zero, where we obviously wanted to go. And, of course, we didn't have that kind of time. And if we did take that kind of time, we were going to hurt a lot more people along the way. So we took an approach to develop courageous leadership, began in 2003 and continues to date. A lot of companies have dabbled in leadership over the years. In fact, we modeled part of our program after a very successful initiative that Phelps Dodge had in the 1990s. The problem with most companies who delve into leadership, they find it too difficult, too time-consuming, and they give up on it. They do it one time, and it has some short-term impact, but then it fades into the sunset very quickly. And we knew that we had to be different than that. We had to have not only an initial thrust, but something to refresh and renew it periodically, usually every 18 months or so. We developed highly interactive sessions. This wasn't just a class you went to and somebody talked to you all day long and you signed a paper at the end of the day saying you did it. We put people into table groups. There's some Barrick people here who have experienced this. Did a lot of work on identifying how we behave individually and also common problems that we see sometimes in our workplaces. When I left Barrick, over 32,000 people had been through a course. All supervisory people went through a two-day course. And shortly after we launched it, the request came back to us, what about our hourly people? We need something for them, so we put a one-day course out there for them, and in my opinion, both were highly successful. We worked with a leadership guru out of Hamilton, Ontario. His name is Jim Clemmer. He's an author of many books. We used his text, The Leader's Digest, as the prerequisite reading for the course. And we also used his leadership wheel that you see there with six different hubs in the wheel or spokes on the wheel, and the hub of it being the focus and context. And just to explain that in a little bit of detail, the focus and context was Barrick's safety vision, every person going home safe and healthy every day. I think today numerous companies have some sort of version of that as their vision. When we worked our session on responsibility for choices, we really got people to focus on what can they do. Instead of complaining about what the company needs to do or what the management needs to do or the government needs to do or their wife needs to do or husband needs to do, what can they do? And that seemed to resonate quite well with a lot of our people. We moved into authenticity, where we talk a lot about walking the talk. Words are easy, words are cheap. How do you model what you say? There's a quote somewhere that says 70% of communication is nonverbal. So people believe what they see, not necessarily what they hear. Asking for feedback, not necessarily a strong management trait, but quite a strong leadership trait. Passion and commitment, a whole session on charging their emotions, some high-impact videos, some high-impact stories and discussion that were held to charge their emotion, to get them to feel something. There's another saying out there that says, when you change what you believe, you will change what you do. And in order to change what you believe, it quite often takes some sort of an emotional trigger. Most of us, if we've had a significant near miss or actually suffered a traumatic injury, our behavior changes. I'm a little bit stymied by the fact that even though we all know texting and talking on our cell phones while driving is a bad thing to do, we all continue to do it, even though we've experienced significant near misses, significant close calls while doing modeling that behavior. Spirit and meaning, believing what is possible, get yourself to believe first and then work on others around you. Growing and developing is all about coaching, and I preach a lot about coaching is not telling people what to do. Coaching is helping them to do better. And finally, mobilizing and energizing, where we talk about what barriers are in the workplace to modeling these types of behaviors and coming up with solutions, having them come up with solutions of what they can do about that. So that's kind of a short course around the courageous leadership piece. In that course and alongside it, we talk a lot about risk. So I've got another short video for you here.
The mouth of the bears catch only the tastiest, most tender salmon, which is exactly what we at John West want. John West endure the worst to bring you the best.
Old video there, but the lesson is pretty important, I think, because it indicates that John West people will do whatever it takes to put the fish in the can. They'll accept all kinds of risk. And guess what? Your people are no different. In fact, you're probably no different. When there's a job to be done, you'll figure out a way to do it. You'll do it in the quickest way, the easiest way, more than likely, but not necessarily the safest or the right way. So how did we get people to understand that one of the reasons companies begin to put all these controls into place is because there is no common sense around risk. There's no common denominator. Risk is different for every single one of us. So the question becomes, what are we willing to do regarding the acceptance and control of our risks? I like to put safety on this balance beam, if you will. On the left side are the safety systems, the tools, the policies, procedures, rules, laws, all those kinds of things that we put into a traditional safety program. And I think, unfortunately, for a long time in the mining industry, companies put a lot of emphasis on pushing that left side of the envelope because it's easy, it's quick, it's what I call command and control. Tell people what to do, expect that they'll go do it, beat them up if they don't. Do it right. On the other side of the scale, this leadership piece, coaching people, encouraging people, motivating them, empowering them. I think in Barrick, we might have swung the pendulum too far that way for a while, and we ignored some of the more technical aspects. But at the end of the day, I think we did get it balanced. And so the companies I talk to today, a lot of them, we work on not shifting them totally towards leadership, but at least trying to learn and understand the difference between management and leadership and achieve that balance. What does that mean to you? Well, there's some examples of what I call management activities. Written communications, lighting a fire under people, controlling activities, number of bullet points there. And if you compare that to these leadership activities, stoking the fire within people as opposed to lighting the fire under people, persuading them to do things right, leading by example, caring about people and actually showing that you care. Why don't we do more of that? It sounds simple, makes sense, I think. We don't do it because it takes time, it takes energy, it takes emotional engagement, and so it's easier to take the other route. Certainly, we've come a long ways with what I call command and control safety. We've made improvement, but we will never, ever get to zero unless we learn how to balance it with this leadership stuff. I don't think it's possible. Looking back, when we talk about courageous leadership, we hear from everyone. It changed the culture, not just in Barrick, but in a number of other companies. Certainly, there was a great improvement in morale and safety risk awareness. The total recordable frequency rate lowered by leaps and bounds. 1,200 fewer injuries per year. That's a pretty big step. What does it mean to the bottom line? $50 million a year in savings. It took a lot of time, but that program paid for itself over and over and over again. About halfway through that, we did some trend analysis on the incidents, and certainly it was very clear that a significant percentage of our incidents were driving related. And as I talked with other mining companies in the Mining Safety Roundtable at ICMM and other safety organizations or mining organizations, they're all having the same difficulty. We continue to have incidents related to driver behavior. National Department of Transportation tells us that in the western U.S., 28% of the people don't wear seatbelts. Percentage is slightly different in the eastern U.S. for some odd reason. For those of you from Canada, the compliance there is somewhat better. We know from studies would be eliminated if seatbelts were worn. We know that more than 90% of people speed. How many in this room, by show of hands, can say that they actually drive the speed limit, not 5 over, not 10 over, drive the speed limit? I rest my case. But I would assume you all think you're pretty good at safety. Well, while we're doing that, let's test. How many people think they are pretty good at safety? Forget about driving. Sure, why not? How many of you will stand on a chair in your home to change a light bulb rather than a ladder? Yeah. How many of those will actually leave the light switch on so you know when you screw in the new bulb it's going to work? I rest my second case. Well, about 2009, we came across the solution in the form of telematics. And this isn't a commercial for a specific company. A lot of companies are doing telematics today, and I think it's a good thing. In fact, it's probably so good that the government's going to mandate it in the U.S. before too long in all kinds of vehicles. So if you think about this balanced approach, what could we do with telematics that would balance our approach there? Because there are some companies that simply put in a device, they use it as a black box to monitor people, and as a tattletale device, if you will, and they punish people when they catch them doing things wrong. That's one approach. It's relatively successful, I suppose. I don't think it's sustainable. On the other side of the equation, and we actually tried this first in Barrick, we launched an extensive educational program, 12 module videos that we released, one every month, and trying to convince people to do things better, to do things right. They all loved the program, but it didn't change our performance a lick. After that, we bought light vehicle simulators, another great piece of technology. Teach people how to respond to unexpected conditions. Everybody loved going through the simulator courses. Didn't change our performance very much. So we stumbled across this telematics technology. In fact, at the time, I didn't even know telematics was a word. And the solution we chose actually coaches the drivers in real time, in real voice. And as long as they correct their behavior in a set parameter of time, it doesn't count against their driver score. The events don't count against their driver score. So drivers see it as a friendlier approach rather than just a rigid hammer application. Pretty successful. Those are crashes. The crash rate from 2010 to 2011, 68% reduction in driving incidents. Some of the best practices associated with implementing anything, I guess, but certainly a model we tried to apply to telematics, locking in and maintaining our initial focus, know what we could areas of the organization. This wasn't just a safety initiative. It couldn't be. HR needed to be involved. The environment wanted to be involved. IT certainly needed to be involved. We identified champions, and there's some work to be done in that area. The first site I went to, a morning meeting with a supervisor and a bunch of haul truck drivers, and I think there were about 50 drivers in the room, and the supervisor got up and said, "Well, Bruce is here from corporate to tell us about something we're going to do. You're not going to like it, but we're going to do it." Took 2 years to overcome that positive sales pitch. The biggest thing I wanted to point out about all of this, communicate, communicate, communicate. Courageous Leadership was all about communication, building trust with our workers, our employees, our contractors, helping them to understand not just what we were going to do, but why we were going to do it, what impact it was going to have on them. Be upfront and honest with them about it. We need to do this to control our risk, to control our cost, to ensure that you're going to be here every single day to do the job that we need you to do. So I guess looking back, safety for me is a pretty broad spectrum. 9 years of courageous leadership resulted in an overall 70% reduction in incidents. That's all incidents. 2 years of a telematics in-vehicle monitoring system, 68% reduction in crashes. You're all probably in the mining business. You understand the cost of those crashes. You crunch two haul trucks together, that's easily $4 or $5 million incident, easily. And it's a lot more if you kill somebody. We did a lot of work on cost analysis of incidents. A fatality today, anywhere in the world, average cost is $6 million. It's tough to put numbers, dollar numbers, to a life, but the reality is it does impact, have a significant impact on our companies. I guess for all of this, for me, it affirms the need to deal with the technical and the people side of safety. I just recently picked up on the internet a guy named Chester Alton did the 7 steps for an all-in culture, because I think we have to quit calling safety, safety. I think we have to quit calling reliability, reliability. I think we have to come to an understanding that we're just going to do it right. If safety is always seen as something extra, something more, something different that you have to do, that your workers have to do, it's always going to be separated. We're never going to get where we need to go. We just need to do it right. So Chester defines his seven steps. Define your burning platform, create a customer focus, develop agility, share everything. The best cultures are places of truth, of constant communication, and of market transparency. Partner with your talent, root for each other, and establish clear accountability. If people understand not just what they need to do, but why they need to do it, they will step up to the plate. They'll do their damnedest to do it right. Most of you recognize that fellow? Carl Malone, what'd they call him? The mailman. Why? Because he always delivered. I think it was 2007 after Carl had retired in 2003, I believe. 2007, they brought him back to Salt Lake City. He actually comes there quite often because he has some car dealerships there. But they brought him back. They were going to hang his jersey and retire his number in the Delta Center at the time, now the Energy Solutions Arena. They put the big bronze statue out front of Malone and Stockton. And on Monday, when he got to Salt Lake City, there was a lot of discussion in the media, news on TV and the newspapers. What made Carl Malone so special? He couldn't jump higher than everybody else. He couldn't run faster. He certainly wasn't a better shooter. And still today, he holds 6 all-time records in the NBA. One of the best power forwards to ever play the game. By the way, one of those records is for the most missed free throws, so we probably won't talk about that one too much. But all week long, the dialogue went on in the newspaper and on television. They talked to his friends, his family, his coaches, his teammates, his opposing teammate or opposing players. What made him so good? And on Friday morning, they had the answer. Every time he walked on the court, he gave 100%. Well, when I heard that, I thought, gee whiz, he gets paid $5 million a year, he plays 3 games a week. He should be performing at a pretty high standard. But as you think about that further, they practice usually 3 times a day. Even on game days, they had a practice. He had a gym in his home in Salt Lake that he spent countless hours on. So that changes his perspective a little bit. Every time he got on the court, he gave 100%. On day one of my courageous leadership classes, I tell that story and I challenge the group, when you go home tonight, try giving 100%. I don't know what that means for you. It's different for everybody. But experiment with it. See what happens. And of course, usually on day two, I don't generally get much of a response, but I was teaching a class in Johannesburg, South Africa. I had a bunch of supervisors and foremen there from the South Deep Mine. 60 of them, I think, in the room. And day two, they came back in. I said, all right, who did their homework? Around 100%. And one fellow raised his hand. He said, Bruce, I tried what you said. Tears running down his face. He said, normally when I get home at night, my daughter's 2 little girls meet me at the door. I wave at my wife who's in the kitchen cooking dinner. I head for my recliner. They bring me a beer and my newspaper. I turn on the TV and I want to unwind. I want to relax. Last night when I went home, I waved at my wife to join me at the door. She came. I hugged her and my 2 daughters. I said to my wife, why don't you go have a hot soak in the tub? I'll cook dinner for you and the girls. So they did. About an hour later, they all sat down to a nice dinner, no beer, no TV, no newspaper, talked about what each of them had done that day, their joys, their fears, their successes. When dinner was done, he said to his wife again, why don't you go ahead and get ready for bed? I'll clean up the dishes and I'll put the girls to bed. Totally out of character for him. So they did. An hour and a half later, he crawled into bed next to his wife and she rolled over and looked at him and she said, Jim, have you started drinking again? And the tears were streaming down his face. He said, I cannot believe what an ass I have been to my own family. So my challenge to you is, when you're interacting with other people, ratchet up your performance. Behavioral scientists will tell you that we typically function about 60, 65% of our capacity. We get pretty comfortable doing that, fat and sassy, if you will. We meet our work obligations, our social obligations, our family obligations. That's all as good as we need to be. How different would our world be if, when we're interacting with other people, we stepped up our performance? Don't you think it'd be a different place to live? I do. I'll leave you with this. Seeing the results of your efforts is good, but don't get frustrated if others don't share your passion or your vision. Keep looking for the next right answer. The real reward is being able to answer yes every night to the question, have you done your best? And just to prove to you that change does occur, that was me when I was a miner underground at the Homestake Mine. Thank you very much.